Well, good evening again. Good evening. How's everybody? Michael, the only person who has not done that is somebody who's never led singing. Because we've all gotten up here, and my thing is I get up here and I know the tune of the chorus. Boy, I can nail the chorus. But I have no idea how to get there. So good job. I appreciate your preparation and your time. This is going to be a simple lesson today. There's a book by this title, and forgive me, I should have gotten the author's name to credit it. Before, but the phrase is really what was bouncing around my mind. Bloom where you are planted. And really, the title really says it all. But I'll tell you what I had in my mind. This congregation, assuming and hopefully and praising God that we continue to do like we're doing, we're going to go through some changes. Our elders are in the process of looking about adding a facility here, increasing our available capacity to close to 200 people. As you can tell, 102 or 98, somewhere in there is our real capacity. So we need the room. And as we do that, and as we go forward as a congregation over the next 5 to 10 years or so, man, are there going to be some changes. And everybody in this congregation is going to be in a different situation. You might think to yourself, well, I should be a deacon in the church, or I should be an elder, I should be a Bible class teacher, I should lead singing, or whatever the case may be. Well, first of all, most of those opportunities, as far as the service and worship issue, those are available, and David Kerr would like to speak with you about being scheduled. So please step forward to do any of those things you can. But as we move forward, not everybody is going to be in a situation where they know exactly what they should do, right? The Davids know, as far as this is concerned, they're to do everything that's needed to do to make sure we can actually build, make sure we can pay for it? Can we get electrical and water? And how? What's it going to look like? All these things. They know that is their task. So for the rest of us, we don't have that certain a task. But wherever you are, if don't sit around complaining, well, there's nothing for me to do. Oh, there's things for you to do. And even if it's not a task that's given to you by the elders and deacons, there's always something we can do. There's never a bad time to have somebody over the house. There's never a bad time to invite a coworker for a Bible study. There's never a bad time to read your Bible in public. There's never a bad time to do any of those things. So as we go through this process, as we get larger, this congregation, remember, 2.5 years ago, I think averaged 58 a service. Now, we were coming out of COVID, but that was kind of our normal there for a while. So we go from 58 to 90. All of a sudden, maybe there are more people doing more things, and I'm not as involved as I was. Well, as those things change, don't sit there and say, well, I wish I were doing this. Find the thing you can do. Find the thing you can do to add value to the Lord's work and do it. Because I assure you, there's plenty that needs to be done. If you don't believe me, David will be glad to get with you after the services, and we can talk about, I'm not being funny about that. He'd love to talk to you about what you can do for the church here. Maybe we can begin doing a song service, practicing that, doing invitations on Wednesday night, cleaning the building, on and on and on. There are a million things to be done. So as we get through the sermon, that's what I'm trying to get across. Now let's see if we can do so. We start in the book of Esther. Bloom where you are planted. Now I like this title. It makes sense to me. You know, the idea of being king or queen for the day. Esther's not king or queen for a day. She's a queen for this day. See what I did there? Because she was, who knows whether she was brought to this day for this purpose. That was the idea of my cutesy headline. So we're in the book of Esther. Now, to be in the book of Esther is to understand a little bit about the background. This is not during the period of the judges or the kings or even the divided kingdom. This is a period of time after the captivity of both the northern 10 tribes and the southern tribes of Judah. In fact, the name or the word that Hebrews or Israelites began to be known as is Jews. And most historians think that that's a mispronouncing or the way that the Persians said Judah. So these were the refugees from the kingdom of Judah. They became the Jews. The king here is a man named Ahasuerus. This is actually the second kingdom to rule over the Israelites in captivity. Nebuchadnezzar and Babylon had ruled them. Now we're into a Persian king. His name is Ahasuerus. Your Bible may say Xerxes. And historians feel that this is the same king who was the king in the movie 300. So if you know of Xerxes and that Persian king, not that that's history by any stretch of the imagination, but that this is who we're talking about. So we're about 500 years before Christ, about 500 years before Christ, and this Jewish girl gets in a situation where she wins the Miss Persia contest. Vashti had lost the Miss Persia contest in valiant fashion, thank you very much. She refused to wander around naked in front of her husband and her drunk friends, and Ahasuerus, being king, banished her to a faraway land. And I'm paraphrasing that a little bit. But at any rate, that is the situation in which Ahasuerus found himself queenless, and he has a beauty contest. Esther wins, and she is moved from being a servant girl and a slave Jew to being the queen of Persia. And in that, she has a relative named Mordecai. And Mordecai, at one time, discovers a coup plot against Ahasuerus, so he's won some favor there. But the real driving force behind the story of the Esther is the man known as Haman. Haman becomes a high official. Haman thinks he's somebody. And when he rides by Mordecai, he notices something. Everybody else is praising him and bowing down for him, but Mordecai will not. Oh, man, that gets under Haman's skin. So Haman decides not just to kill Mordecai, but to kill every Jew. So you're talking about things escalating quickly? Things escalate quickly. Esther chapter 3 and verse 6 is where we'll begin. This is the story of Haman and Mordecai. Let me back up to verse 5. And when Haman, verse 5 of chapter 3, when Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow down to pay homage to him, Haman was filled with fury. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai. And that's a little bit of a turn of phrase there. He didn't want to just lay hands on Mordecai. It wasn't that he didn't want to grab Mordecai. He did. He didn't want to grab just Mordecai. So he disdained there. He disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone. So as they had made known to him the people of Mordecai, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews, the people of Mordecai, throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus. So Haman has, this, you're talking about an angry guy. This is an angry guy. Over one man not kneeling to him, he's going to produce genocide on all the Jews. Now, I don't know if that's what happened in Mein Kampf. I haven't actually read the book. But a similar kind of fate awaits. This we would call genocide today. So Haman is going to destroy all the Jews. Well, in the middle of all that is Mordecai and Esther. So Esther is now, remember, she is the queen of Persia. Now, you know, it's not like being vice president. It doesn't get you any really authority, but it is a ceremonial situation. And she is there, and Mordecai and Esther are having this conversation where Mordecai says to Esther, Haman is going to kill all the Jews. You have to help us. And Esther's kind of like, nah, you're out there in the street. I'm up here in the palace. Maybe not. So let's pick up on this conversation in verse 10 of chapter 4. So Esther 4, 10. So Haman has decided he's going to kill all the Jews. Mordecai finds out about it. He's going to tell his relative, the Jew, Esther, who's queen of Persia. Verse 10, then Esther spoke to Hathach and commanded him to go to Mordecai and say, Hathach almost certainly a eunuch. Verse 11, all the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces know that if any man or woman goes to the king inside the inner court without being called, there is but one law to be put to death, except the one to whom the king holds out the golden scepter so that he may live. But as for me, I have not been called to come to the king these 30 days. What does that mean? Mordecai is saying, quick, hurry, go tell Ahasuerus that Haman's going to kill all the Jews. And Esther's like, wait a minute. You know this, Mordecai. I can't just wander into the throne room and say, Ahasuerus, can I have a word? All right? Ahasuerus, you come into the presence of the king, you're cut down immediately. This is the Persian secret service does not play games. You're to be cut down immediately unless, and it's a big risk, and you don't know how it's going to go until you get in there, the king extends his scepter to you. So what is Esther saying? Esther's saying, I don't really want to get involved here. This is messy business. Can't we get someone else to do it? Now, before you get too hard on Esther, there are a lot of people do the same kind of thing with situations today. When it comes time to do the hard things, sometimes people don't always want to step up. So Esther has said to Mordecai, I don't really think I should do that. Mordecai is going to both threaten and encourage her through the providence of God. Now, if you can do both in one phrase, you're pretty good. And this is what Mordecai does in 13 and 14. So chapter 4, verse 13. Then Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, "Do not think to yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish." Well, Mordecai is not exactly in a position of power here, but he is acting like it. What's he doing here? He's threatening her. He's saying, if you don't do this, you will pass away and your father's household. Now, he softens that blow a bit, and Esther, if you know the book, is the one book of the Bible in which the word God does not appear. Now, God's providence and God's direction in the world is seen all the way through the book, but his name does not actually appear. This is one of those instances. What Mordecai is saying is, God has put you in this situation just for this reason, just to bring deliverance. So this is what verse 14 says in the finish. "But you and your father's house will perish, and who knows whether you have not come to the kingdom for such a time as this." Then Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, "Go gather all the Jews to be found in Susa. Hold a fast on my behalf. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my young women will also fast as you do. Then I will go to the king, though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." Two pretty good literary phrases there, right? "You may have come to such a time as this." It's a beautifully worded phrase. "And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai and Esther have kind of solved the problem between them. How did they do that? Because Mordecai wanted to remind Esther, she's a Jew, even though she's the queen. And then he wants her to know that God may have put her in this very position to do something. Have you ever seen that happen or felt that happen in your life? I know how I have. You'll be in a situation and it's your time to step up. Your time to deliver. Your time to serve. You know, we talked about what you can do for the work of the Lord. You may not know the thing that you can do. So someone may see something in you, you don't. And they may come to you and say, "Now is the time for you to serve in this area." So Mordecai tells Esther here that this is her time. He's basically saying, "Do you really think that you alone won the Queen of Persia contest? Do you alone think that you were raised to this position because you were some slave girl that was just better looking than everybody else?" Now, look, Esther had to be good looking. I'm not cutting Esther down on that department here. But regardless, what he's saying is God put you there. God put you there. Who gives us our physical abilities? Who gives us our talents? This is a bonus sermon, by the way. You may have talents that you're not using. God may put you in a situation where you have to use those talents. It happens. It happens. You have to be ready and you have to be willing to say yes to God to take advantage of the situation where you can use your talents. So Esther says, "If I perish, I perish." That brings us to chapter 5 and verse 2. What will happen? Esther chapter 5 and verse 2. I'll tell you what, let me back up a verse, might as well for context. "On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes, stood in the inner court of the king's palace in front of the king's quarters, while the king was sitting on his royal throne inside the throne room opposite the entrance to the palace." That had to be a nerve-wracking time. They talk about athletes, many of them, before they have a basketball or football game, they'll throw up. They get so nervous, they get so anxious that they'll throw up. You see guys in games that they can't come through in the clutch sometimes. They'll get so nervous. This is Esther right now. Imagine being Esther. You've dressed yourself up. The king is inside. The door is there. The death of your people is on the balance. And here you go. Man, it's a lot of pressure on a young woman. But she comes through in the clutch. Verse 2. "And when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court, she won favor in his sight, and he held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Then Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter." She did it. That may not seem very dramatic, but there were only two outcomes: immediate death or acceptance. Now, the story's a little long, and this sermon will be long enough as it is, about the different banquets that she invites Ahasuerus and Haman to. If you're familiar with it, you know how dramatic that is. If you're not, take time to read the book of Esther. Once Esther got into the presence of the king, it was over. She had already won his favor. He was going to give her what she wanted. And she did eventually. Haman, in fact, as you know who the story, Haman built a gallows to kill Mordecai and all the Jews on. You know who ended up on that gallows? Haman. All because God put Esther in the right place, and Esther acted on it and did what she could where she was. That's all God asks of any of us. Do what you can where you are. If we do those things, if everybody in this congregation began to do one more thing, how much better would it be? How much more growth would we see? How much more growth would you see personally if you added one more thing to the repertoire of things you did? Esther came through in the clutch because she was prepared to do what she needed to do where she was. Well, there's one other story I want to get to in the Old Testament before we get to the New, and that is of Daniel. And first of all, I am fully aware that neither of these sermons is original nor new to you. But it is a good reminder that Daniel was able to withstand the lion's den in large part because he had good habits. He had good habits. You know, we use the word religious in differing ways. Someone may say religious in referring to how often they come to worship God. But we also say someone does something religiously. And they are tied together because hopefully you do your worship to God religiously. But I want you to know that Daniel had religious habits. Yes, they were spiritual, but they were the kind of habits he did religiously. Three times a day, Daniel prayed to God. Not only do we know he did that because he knew he did it, everybody around him knew that three times a day, Daniel would pray to his God. When you do something so frequently that your coworkers and your family and the people you know, they know you do this thing, it changes their attitude about you, changes the way they treat you, changes the way they look at you. And if you're going to withstand some of the things that will affect you in this world, some of the temptations that will affect you, you need good habits. You need to be religious in your habits. You know the story, Daniel chapter 6 and verse 5, Daniel 6 and verse 6. Let me get over there. Joseph and Daniel, not Esther. Daniel chapter 6, we'll begin in verse 6. This again is, and I realized as soon as I did this lesson, I'm probably stepping on Wiley's toes with his lessons, but hopefully he just redoes them anyway. Does it better. How about that? Daniel 6 and 6 reads like this. Then these presidents and satraps came by agreement to the king and said to him, O King Darius, live forever. Now these are officials of the king, and they don't like Daniel. They want something bad to happen to Daniel. So they come in and they flatter Darius. Then verse 7, all the presidents of the kingdom, the prefects and satraps and counselors and the governors are agreed. The king should establish an ordinance and enforce an injunction that whoever makes petition to any god or man for 30 days, except to you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. That was not an accidental decree. If you don't think that official government decrees can get you in trouble, you're just not paying attention. Darius here gets himself into trouble by making a declaration. And the first thing he does is he listens to what? Flattery. The person who's overly flattering you does not have your good intentions at heart, as a general rule. Flattery is one of those things that should toss up a warning flag in your mind. So they come in and they say, oh, great King Darius, who's better than you? Man, you're so great, everybody should just praise you. Man, Darius, you got it going on. Now, what do they know? They know what Daniel does three times a day. And notice, they even know the right punishment. That person should be thrown in the lion's den. They're not concerned with everybody else in the kingdom. They're concerned solely with Daniel and harming him through the king. You know the story. We'll just touch on it briefly. Verse 10, chapter 6 and verse 10. When Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber, open towards Jerusalem. He got down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. Do you know how people get through tough times? Do you know how people don't lose their faith? Because they've got a reservoir of righteous deeds in their back pocket. The person that becomes a weak at coming to services, the person that's come once a month or twice a month, and all of a sudden they go once a month, and then it's once every 2 months, and then they're gone away, they don't have the reservoir of worship services that you do coming three times a week. So if I'm a three-time-a-weeker and I miss, for one thing, people will notice, right, because I'm usually here. They know if I'm not here, I'm either sick or out of town. And when I say I mean any of us that do that. So I have good habits. If I miss a Wednesday night or I miss a Sunday night, is that going to affect me? Probably almost not at all, right? If I'm Dave Music, say Dave, and I've got a fever and I'm hallucinating about things and I can't make it to services and I miss a Sunday night, is there any doubt that he's going to be back Wednesday night? As long as he's well, he will be. Why? Because he has a habit of doing that over time, and that bounces back pretty quickly. If you don't have those habits, you miss a service, you miss two services, you might fall away. We've all seen it happen. So what's the point? Develop your religious habits religiously. Have that breastplate of righteous acts to protect you when the times are tough. Now, we know Daniel gets thrown into the lion's den, because of course he does. And we know that God keeps him healthy. And that we know that Darius comes and he likes Daniel and he cries out to him and says this in verse 20. Daniel chapter 6 and verse 20. And he, that's Darius, came near to the den where Daniel was. He cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, "O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions?" Then Daniel said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent his angel and shut the lions' mouths, and they have not harmed me. Because I was found blameless before him, and also before you, O king, I have done no harm." Haman, the enemy of the Jews, thought that he would hang Mordecai. He was hanged on that gallows. These counselors and satraps and advisors thought that they would see Daniel crushed by the teeth of the lions. You know the rest of the story. Darius has Daniel come out, and he sends those same counselors who made this decree into the lion's den, them and their families, and they were destroyed. They were eaten by lions. Realize you may be put in a position where you can do something. God may have put you in that position to do that thing. Whatever it is, whatever your hands find to do, let's do them. And then let's have the religious habits and the strength of character and be the backbone of a congregation so that when things need to be done, you can rely on someone who has good religious habits. Just briefly, let's take a look at how this is applied in the New Testament. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, Paul here is talking about the different parts of the body. And again, this is another passage. If you're not familiar with it, you really should read it just because of the eloquence of it. But Paul is talking about the difference here between your hand and your eye and your foot. And you can't have a body with all of them, and one part of your body can't say it's better than the other. If your eye says I'm the best, how is it going to get anywhere to see something? It's not. But Paul, within this, is saying we all have something we can do. Envy can set in, and I can say, I want to do what so-and-so can do. Or why can't I teach Bible class? Or why can't I do this? Or why can't I do that? That can set in with the congregation. Don't do that. Find the thing you can do and do that. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 21. And we're doing this backwards. I apologize for that. We're going to do verse 21 and then go back to 18. So chapter 12, verse 21. The eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you. Nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. So all the parts are needed to go together. Now back up to verse 18. But as it is, God arranged the members in the body, each one of them, as he chose. God has put you in the situation you're in. Are you doing what you can do? That was the question for Esther. That was the thing Daniel needed to be able to stand on, his religious principles, because he had been principled religiously. Do I recognize that God has put me in this congregation for a reason? Let me tell you something. There are people in the sound of my voice right now. There are things that you can do for this congregation. There are men and women in this congregation that can do more than you're doing. God has put you here for a reason. God has put you here for a purpose. Let's seek to fulfill it. And finally, 1 Corinthians chapter 7 is where we'll close. And this just reinforces the idea. Where I am, what my title is, what my role is, what my job is, that may seem, let's just say for a moment I'm a man. I think I'm a great song leader. I'm not a great song leader, so I don't know, no one thinks that. But let's assume that we've all known these guys. If I had my hair sprayed back real nice, you know, and maybe I wore really fancy clothes and I came in and I really led singing. But let's say at this congregation, let's say for whatever reason the elders don't want to use me on Sunday morning. Let's say they don't want to use me on Sunday night. Let's say they're using me on Wednesday night. How could that go? I tell you how it could go. Well, I'll tell you what, they can't recognize somebody comes into the congregation with a talent like me. They're just not thinking right. Well, you know what that guy may need? He may need a little humility. And I tell you something else. Are you under the impression that we don't need people to lead singing on Wednesday night? Let me just tell you we do. Are you under the impression that we don't need people to lead on Sunday night? I promise you we do. Are you under the impression we don't need people to do invitations, do longer services, teach Bible class, clean the building, shake hands, give people cards when they visit? Trust me, there's something in that combination of things we can all do better. And remember, it's God who gave me that role. So if God put me in a role, it's my job to make it shine, to do the best I can. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 20 and 24. We'll read it briefly and the lesson will be yours. 1 Corinthians 7 is a discussion of marriage and different situations you can get yourself in. And Paul basically says this, when you become a Christian in that state, don't look to change things. And the other thing he's saying to us is this, when we become a Christian, regardless of our marriage state, don't seek to change who we are. When I became a Christian, I was who I am as a secular man, and I don't necessarily need to change that. I just need to do the Christian thing in the situation. Verse 20, 1 Corinthians 7, verse 20. Each one of you should remain in the condition in which he was called. Were you a slave when called? Do not be concerned about it. But if you can gain your freedom, avail yourself of the opportunity. For he who is called in the Lord is a slave, as a slave is a freedman to the Lord. Likewise, he who is free when is called is a slave of Christ. You were bought with a price, so do not become slaves of men. So, brothers, in whatever condition each was called, there let him remain with God. Whatever situation you're in, don't worry about your situation. Worry about what you can do. That's it. Whatever that thing is to do, do it. I promise you, as a congregation that will be going through a lot of changes and a lot of things that we're going to be stepping out on some limbs to do, there are going to be changes, there are going to be inconveniences, there are going to be situations where you may be asked to do more than you want to do, or you may not get to do as much as you want. Whatever it is, do the thing for the Lord He would have you do. We are Christians. We are servants of the King. There are things we can do for Jesus Christ, no matter our situation, no matter whether we think it's a great thing or a small thing. Even the vessels of dishonor are worthy. That's our lesson. I really don't know that I've said what I want to say. I've done the best I can. Hopefully the Lord will finish the message. I mean that sincerely. Hopefully He will make it make inspiration and sense to you. We're going to need everybody on deck. It's not going to be easy to do what we're looking to do. And if there's anyone who lays back, if there's any dissension, if there are any of those things, that'll be very, very harmful. And we're talking about the Lord's work. Guys, if we can put a facility over here for 200 people, we're talking about a congregation that can last for 50, 100 years. Not because of our name or because of any man-made thing, but because of why? The glory of God. There are 300,000 people in this county. 300,000 people. We got two little churches under 100. Come on. The way to get to that, do you know how much more sustainable a congregation of 150 is than a congregation of 50? It's astronomical. Try and get elders out of 50. Been there, done that. You give me 150 faithful Christians, a little bit easier. Let's do those things because they strengthen the work of the Lord in this area, and the Lord may give us sinners that we can teach and save people that we can encourage. And let's work together, and let's do the thing that we can do to benefit this work. It's not mine, it's not the Davids, it's not the deacons, it's not the song leaders. It's God's through Jesus Christ. Praise His name. May we do all things to honor Him and let our light shine where we are. That's our lesson. If you're not a Christian, we want you to be so bad. Salvation is just a moment away. You can confess your faith in Jesus. Confess Him as your Lord. We'll baptize you. Your sins will be forgiven by God. And you can stand in grace and begin to serve the Lord today. If you've fallen out of service or you found yourself struggling with sin and you need prayer, if there's anything we can do, we would love to help you as we stand and we sing.